versus Samsung. These two tech giants are back in the courtroom soon, continuing to fight over billions in fines and dozens of patents. Techonomics host Jason Middleton welcomes a patent expert and veteran Silicon Valley journalist to tee up the pending courtroom drama. That discussion starts now.
Hello and welcome back to Techonomics. For this next segment, the evolution of the story is as important as what's going to happen next in the legal battles between Apple and Samsung. At the launch of iPhone, Apple owned the space, largely because it not only disrupted existing smartphone markets, but created a new product and expectations. Samsung liked the way that looked, and Samsung liked a lot of Apple's look and feel, and some technology seemed to land in Samsung's new line of phones. Apple sued. Steve Jobs was a lot of things: perfectionist, vociferous, visionary, and litigious.
And we have invented a new technology called multi-touch, which is phenomenal. It works like magic. You don't need a stylus. It's far more accurate than any touch display that's ever been shipped. It ignores unintended touches. It's super smart. You can do multi-finger gestures on it. And boy, have we patented it.
Since that time and since the death of Steve Jobs, Samsung has been leading with innovative smartphone technology that Apple has yet to incorporate. And the two tech giants are readying their legal teams to march back into court in San Jose. We asked a patent expert and veteran Silicon Valley reporter whether we should pop some popcorn and watch the fight, or if these two teams might want to call a truce. And that chat with him starts now.
Mike Swift, I'm the Chief Digital Risk Correspondent for MLEX Market Insight.
That is a cool title, by the way. And your new article, the reason we asked you in is just not for this article specifically, but for, you know, a 360 look at what's going on here. Samsung advances bid for new trial against Apple on design patent damages. It's a bit of a dry headline, but this is an ongoing saga in the Valley. So why don't you give us some context how we got to this point of where we might get a new trial?
So this saga goes back more than 6 years now to when Apple first sued Samsung, saying that Samsung had essentially copied the first generation iPhone. And that led to what was dubbed the patent trial of the century, where a jury ultimately said that Samsung owed Apple $1.05 billion in damages for essentially copying the iPhone,
right?
Both its appearance as well as its function. And since then, we've just had endlessly long series of appeals that have gone all the way up to the United States Supreme Court, and in the process have really rewritten a century of patent law.
Refresh my memory. Was the first trial when Steve Jobs was still alive?
Jobs had just died, but even at that time, you know, his shadow really was cast over the courtroom. He had died the previous year, but there was a very strong feeling that, you know, Apple's pursuit of trying to bring Samsung to justice, so to speak, for copying the iPhone was really something that he had set in motion before he passed away.
Okay. There was a protectorate around the iPhone because it was Steve's baby.
Absolutely. Also, Android, the operating system that runs Samsung phones and many other phones, Jobs viewed as a quote-unquote stolen product. And so really, Google was kind of standing in the backdrop of this trial, even though they were never a defendant in any of the three trials. Mm-hmm. There were still Google executives that testified in one of the trials.
Reference to the stolen technology, we have to remind everybody, Steve Jobs borrowed the graphical interface from Xerox back in the day at the beginning. So that's a further context. Mike, thanks again for coming in, because I want to get from that huge number from the first settlement, $105 billion, to the settlement right now of $399 million. How did we get here?
Well, it's kind of amazing because, you know, we started out with that billion-dollar verdict, and yet here we are, you know, we're almost 6 years after that verdict came out, and we still really don't really have a very clear sense of what Samsung may ultimately owe Apple. Samsung has already paid Apple about $550 million, but because there are still the certainty of at least one more trial, which will possibly change the damages number, we don't really know what the ultimate cost to Samsung will be.
Okay. It seems like In just in general terms, right, before we get into the patents, because that's where the meat is on the bone, I understand. But when iPhone came out, of course, everybody thought Samsung copied, and kept doing that. Then kind of there was a leapfrog moment where Samsung got ahead on technology, such as retinal vision and the no home button.
Right.
Even the fingerprint scanner was ahead of the curve, right? So was there any reverse patents? Like, does Apple have to worry about that now that they're catching up with Samsung technology?
I don't think in terms of patents. This suit was filed in 2011, right at the time where Samsung was moving ahead of Apple because of Samsung's copying, Apple said. Slavish copying was the term that Apple actually used, which I always loved. You know, now their positions have reversed. Earlier this year, Apple became the number one smartphone maker again. But most analysts feel that that's largely due to Samsung's debacle with the Galaxy Note 7. And that's really what caused Samsung to lose momentum in the marketplace rather than the patents. You know, and I think it's really on the legal side that, you know, Apple has really changed things. But Samsung has had some notable wins, too, most specifically with decision by the United States Supreme Court last year that basically may well change design patent law that goes back to 1887, which is kind of an amazing thing.
Wow, yeah. Let's unpack that, because 1887 laws coming out of the election, there were some 18th century laws that were being looked at, including the emoluments. So this is not a static thing. So how did they affect those 1887, and how does it relate to this new trial that's coming up?
So there were two types of patents at issue in the trial. One is utility patents, which basically cover the function of an iPhone, things like the swipe to unlock feature on the touchscreen. But there are also design patents, which basically cover the appearance and the shape, but not the function of the iPhone. So if you remember the first iPhone 3G, it had that beautiful rounded rectangular shape, the metal bezel that ran around the face. Those were the factors that were the patents that were really at issue in the trial. Mm-hmm. Samsung was found to have copied those things. But the issue was, how much does Samsung pay in damages for that? The number that the jury ultimately awarded was $399 million approximately for design patents for the design of the iPhone. But the issue was, in design patent law, there's a phrase called article of manufacture. That verdict was based on the value of the article of manufacture being a full iPhone. Samsung argued to the Supreme Court, no, it should only be the specific patented elements, you know, the shape of the phone in this case, and the bezel that ran around the face of it. And the Supreme Court ultimately found that article of manufacture could be the full device, or it could be a component of the device. And so that's what brings us back to the present, where we may well have another trial that would set damages based on just those specific elements of the appearance of the iPhone rather than the full phone itself.
Before we get into Judge Lucy Koh, I have a question about something outside of the courtroom that may have an effect on it, because it seems like since Tim Cook took over as CEO that Apple and Samsung have been a little friendlier in the marketplace. Am I misreading that?
They were always frenemies. I mean, the irony was that, you know, Samsung was a huge supplier of components for the iPhone, you know, even as it was copying, slavishly copying. So, you know, there's always been an association between the two. But now, you know, what's going on now, Apple's big fight is actually with Qualcomm. So earlier this year, Apple sued Qualcomm in San Diego, alleging that Qualcomm's business model for licensing its patents violated the antitrust laws. And Samsung, and that is not a party to that case, but Apple and Samsung are very much on sort of the same side in opposition to Qualcomm. Mm. So that's sort of a way where, you know, there are so many shifting alliances and connections in Silicon Valley. There's no company which is sort of an isolated monolith. They all have sort of fingers in each other's pies to some degree. And this case is a really good example of that.
With every headline-worthy lawsuit that drops, I always look for the amicus briefs to find out who's changing teams.
Indeed.
On that one this time.
Indeed, yes.
Let's go back to your Supreme Court mention with the Apple-Samsung case, that settlement. Okay, so that gets kicked back down to Judge Lucy Koh in the South Bay?
Correct.
What is Judge Lucy Koh like when it comes to this? I mean, she's going to have to rule again on something she's already ruled on.
She's an incredibly hardworking judge. In this hearing they had last week, both sides really wanted her to rule now on the article of manufacture issue, which will determine if there's going to be a new trial on that issue. She wasn't ready. Even though they brought in their big guns, their top lawyers, she basically said, no, we're going to go through this very deliberative process where we're going to have hearings on this, and then I'll make a decision. So she is not someone that you can push around. I spent literally hundreds of hours in her courtroom over the past 5 years, and you know, I've really come to admire her style from the bench.
So is she setting up case law to deal with this because it's going to apply moving into the future, or is she kind of setting the new ground rules for the present?
So she essentially, what the Supreme Court said is that, you know, an article of manufacture can be a component of a device or it can be the entire device. But it said, trial court, in this case, Judge Koh, you are going to have to devise the test which will decide whether it's A or B. So she essentially has been designated by the Supreme Court as the judge that will establish this test. Now, the way things work, whatever test she comes up with, it's probably likely it's going to be appealed to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit. So she won't be the final word. But this is a pretty weighty responsibility. So you can see why she would want to take more time in devising that test.
Sure. And considered a judicious decision is wanted because aren't patents used as legal cudgels in Silicon Valley to this day?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, back in 2012, around the time this trial was first starting, you know, there was really a race to acquire patents that were sort of viewed as kind of a war chest. Often patents are a way, it's almost like nuclear weapons. If you have, you never want to use your nuclear weapons, obviously, mm-hmm. but you need to have them to make sure you never use them. Patents and patent portfolio can be a similar type of weapon. You know, it can sort of help you and ensure that no one will ever go after you. I mean, hopefully. So there's a certainly a defensive aspect as well as an offensive one to a patent portfolio.
Yeah, I remember when Verizon was looking under the hood at Yahoo, Yahoo's portfolio was worth almost as much as the existing install user base.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, yeah. So
that was part of that final price tag.
Yeah.
Didn't the federal government open a patent office here in Silicon Valley to help speed through patents?
They did. About 2 years ago, the USPTO opened an office in San Jose, right in downtown San Jose, right adjacent to City Hall. That actually is a court in itself. The patent office has instituted a new type of court called the Patent Trial and Appeal Board, where you can challenge the validity of a patent. That's yet another battlefield in the patent wars, which has opened, and it's been also an element in this dispute between Apple and Samsung.
Let's play if this, then that to finish. So Judge Koh comes back, sits on the bench, calls in all those high-powered lawyers. Can you sketch out for us what happens depending on which way she rules?
We do know there will be one more trial next June, and that is on an issue which was still hanging out there for years, extremely complicated, that has to do with an appeals court throwing out the trade dress damages, and so they need to have another trial for that. The question is, will there also be another trial in the design patent damages? It's difficult to predict because we don't know what sort of test, how she will draw that test. Mm-hmm. I think it's likely that there will be another trial, but, you know, it's possible I could be wrong. I've learned over time not to predict the twists and turns in this case. It's just so complicated and difficult to predict.
Well, your institutional knowledge is greatly appreciated. You've been following this for a long, long time here in the Valley. Did I miss anything that I should have included or anything you wanted to include?
No, I don't think so. I think you ask great questions.
Great. Mike, thanks a lot for coming in.
My pleasure.
That was Mike Swift. Mike writes for MLEX.com. It's a global newswire that specializes in regulatory risk. They also make the difficult stuff easy to understand. Mike Swift is also the former chief internet reporter for the San Jose Mercury News, as well as SiliconValley.com. For links to Mike's stories and MLEX's work, check out the story that goes with this week's show at KGORadio.com/Techonomics. They're all in there. If you're listening to this on the radio and you dig the subject, please check out our longer version on the podcast. We just had too much good stuff to air. It's all at KGORadio.com/Techonomics. Coming up next, we're going back to school, digital style. All of the talk about retraining and digital transformation that the economy is undergoing can be kind of overwhelming. A new Silicon Valley university is helping bridge that knowledge gap. Gaining a digital skill set is next. I'm Jason Middleton, and this is Techonomics. Please come on back.